greater connectivity benefits the greater good. And Qualcomm invented 5G breakthroughs that make it possible. See us where 5G is taking on some of the world's biggest challenges. Join us in making the world more connected with 5G.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, March 9th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. The U.S. power grid is under pressure. It's aging, under stress from higher demand, and the increasing number of storms and wildfires are leading to more blackouts. This is forcing energy companies to look for new solutions. And one place companies could turn to reduce the stress on their system is the nation's growing fleet of electric vehicles. On today's show, reporter Jennifer Hiller, who covers renewable energy for the Wall Street Journal, joins us to discuss why power companies could be turning to EV batteries and what that could mean for the country's energy future. That's after these headlines. More companies are suspending operations in Russia in response to the country's continued invasion of Ukraine. On Tuesday, Japanese credit card company JCB said it would follow Visa and MasterCard, suspending core operations in Russia. The company said cards issued in Russia couldn't be used outside of the country, and vice versa. Apple showed off a host of new and updated products at a virtual event yesterday, including a new, faster, high-performance computer chip called the M1 Ultra and an updated iPad Air. It also revealed a new 5G version of its lower-end iPhone SE, but also announced it was raising the price from $399 to $429. Our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern says it's not that $30 is such a huge increase for a phone. The notable thing is why Apple decided to raise it.
One of the big things you get is improved performance with Apple's own new chip, which is the A15 chip, the A15 Bionic chip. Maybe that caused the jump in price, but I don't think so. I think this more has to do with 5G, possibly the modems and some of the technology that they needed for that, and that was a little bit more costly. And other than that, there are really updates that are not tied to the hardware. So there are some camera improvements, but those are, again, tied to the processor. So when you really think about what is the reason, it's probably coming down to either the new processor or that new 5G technology.
Elon Musk has asked a federal judge to scrap a settlement he reached with the Securities and Exchange Commission in 2018, requiring his tweets to be pre-approved by Tesla's lawyers. In a court filing Tuesday, lawyers for the Tesla CEO called the policy unworkable. The unusual settlement came following allegations from the SEC that Musk defrauded investors by tweeting that he had secured funding to take Tesla private. WSJ reporter Dave Michaels says the settlement has led to an ongoing conflict between the two parties about whether or not Musk has been following the rule.
That policy that required Elon to get pre-approval for his tweets and certain other statements, that is very unusual in the world of sort of public company regulation, Wall Street regulation. And it created really an ongoing conflict where the two sides have never seen eye to eye on how that policy should be enforced. The SEC has said to Tesla several times, we think Elon tweeted without pre-approval. We think he made statements that are covered by the agreement. And lawyers for Tesla and Elon said, nope, don't agree. Those statements are not covered. So they've been skirmishing ever since the settlement. A lot of companies settle with the SEC and try to, you know, stay on the SEC's good side and not antagonize the SEC then. But Tesla and the SEC and Elon Musk have never really patched things up. And they're still fighting to this day.
An SEC spokesman declined to comment. At least six U.S. states were hit by a Chinese hacking group last May, according to new findings made public by cybersecurity firm Mandiant. U.S. officials have previously linked the hackers believed to be from the group dubbed Advanced Persistent Threat 41, or APT-41, to Beijing's Ministry of State Security. China has denied involvement in the hacks. Mandiant didn't disclose which specific states or government agencies had been breached, but it did say the APT-41 hackers leveraged the Log4j flaw to compromise at least two of the state governments. And speaking of Mandiant, Google says it plans to buy the cybersecurity company for nearly $5.4 billion. The deal is expected to help boost Google's comparatively small but rapidly growing cloud unit at a time when businesses have seen a wave of attacks on their systems. This acquisition is the second largest in the history of the company's parent Alphabet, and it coincides with increased antitrust scrutiny from the Department of Justice. All right, coming up, electric vehicles are increasingly powering U.S. road trips. Could they be juicing up our power grids next? We'll discuss after the break.
Greater connectivity benefits the greater good. And Qualcomm invented 5G breakthroughs that make it possible. See us where 5G is helping to make remote education more accessible. Join us in making the world more connected with 5G.
There was a lot of energy-related news yesterday. President Biden announced the U.S. is banning imports of oil and natural gas from Russia, a move that will raise energy prices in the short term. But the president said that shouldn't lead the U.S. to reduce its focus on renewable energy.
It should motivate us to accelerate the transition to clean energy. This is a perspective that our European allies share, and a future where together we can achieve greater independence. Loosening environmental regulations or pulling back clean energy investment will not lower energy prices for families. But transforming our economy to run on electric vehicles powered by clean energy with tax credits to help American families winterize their homes and use less energy, that will help.
Meanwhile, General Motors and California energy provider PG&E said on Tuesday they plan to test out ways to use electric vehicles to power homes during outages, something that has become increasingly frequent as wildfire seasons intensify. But what could these developments mean for energy delivery overall? And given the current geopolitical situation, is now the moment they really take off? Joining us to discuss this is our renewable energy reporter, Jennifer Hiller. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jennifer, let's start with some of that news. GM and PG&E announced this plan to test out ways of using EVs to power the grid. Can you just start by explaining exactly how that would work?
So if you wanted to use a vehicle to power the grid, basically you're talking about having your car plugged into an outlet in your garage, and that outlet would be able to flow power two ways. Most outlets go one way. So I plug something in and the outlet delivers power into my coffee pot or the microwave or something like that. If you wanted to do vehicle to grid, basically you need to have a charging station. You would install a charging station in your garage and it would need to be enabled for two-way flow.
Okay, so that's the general idea of how it could work. So what exactly are these two companies testing?
So this is a really interesting pilot that these two companies are trying out to see basically if you can feed power from electric vehicles into the grid during these periods of peak demand, when the grid maybe is really struggling trying to supply power to everybody. And, you know, it's an interesting idea. It's technically possible. And a lot of people think, you know, basically that we have the hardware to be able to do this, but that a lot of the testing, you know, kind of the devil is in the details with the software and how to make this work the exact way. But these are both large, you know, huge utility and, you know, a huge manufacturer coming together to work on this. So it'll be interesting to see what their experience is and if it, you know, how it sort of benefits the utility side or for consumers and, you know, if it can help maybe lower their bills as well.
Why would these two companies in particular want to test out a pilot like this? And I'm curious if there's other companies that are trying it as well.
Right. Well, you know, General Motors is a huge auto manufacturer. PG&E is a giant utility in California. And so these are really the two kinds of companies that are most interested in seeing how this technology works and how it might benefit people. From the GM side of things, they're probably wanting to, you know, test it out. Ultimately, it's the car companies that stand behind the battery warranties. So if I buy a GM, you know, if I need to replace the battery at some point, then it's GM that I'm going to be dealing with. I'm not necessarily going to be associating any extra use of my battery with my utility. I will be complaining to my car manufacturer potentially. Utilities have an interest in this because utilities are essentially looking for all sources of reliable power that they can find right now. We have a big reliability challenge. We have things like population growth. We have a move towards renewables, a shifting mix of power generation, and that all sends utilities looking for basically all sources of power that they can find. And if you have it stored in a battery sitting around in a bunch of garages across a state, then maybe you can tap into some of those. And it might be able to benefit consumers in some way as well if you can financially compensate them in a way that, you know, makes up for, you know, the use of their battery. So it has to be kind of worth it for everybody.
I mean, speaking of making it worth it for everybody, I mean, ideally, these batteries wouldn't just be turning on the lights in one person's home. They'd be powering, you know, the overall grid. So how do you convince EV owners and drivers to sign up for something like that?
So this is a huge unanswered question, I think, that the industry is looking at and that a lot of pilot projects, this one and others all across the country, are trying to sort through. What is the business model that works for everybody, but especially for consumers, and to convince them that this is worthwhile to sign up for? I think that the idea that you might use your electric vehicle for your own home, if you have a power outage, a big storm, something that maybe knocks out your power for a day or two, the idea that you might use your car as sort of a backup for your house, I think would make sense to consumers in a certain way. It's another step to say, would you provide power to the grid for the benefit of everybody?
What are some of the other hurdles to making a plan like this work?
So batteries are able to do this, but what's not completely understood yet and is the subject of a lot of debate and research within these different pilot programs across the country is just, what is the impact on battery life and how does this affect sort of the wear and tear as you are sort of charging and then discharging the battery onto the grid? When you talk to people who have been involved in these pilot programs, they just don't have all of the answers at this point as to how exactly this impacts the car's battery over time. But I mean, clearly a lot of car manufacturers are comfortable enough with it. If the Ford F-150 is, you know, being marketed in part as backup power for the house, so Ford is comfortable enough with that idea that they're willing to market that and to sort of stand behind that battery warranty over time.
Given the increase in storms, in wildfires, and certainly the geopolitical situation at the moment, is there more pressure on utility companies and I guess maybe even car companies to make solutions like this work?
I think the pressure is really on the utilities to continue to provide reliability as they're having to deal with this dynamic and changing situation. The utility's main responsibility is reliability and in delivering power. And so anything that they can do to ensure that they can deliver power to you is something that they're looking at. So this, yeah, the idea of using vehicle-to-grid technology is just one part of, you know, a lot of work that's going on. You know, there's utility-scale battery storage projects happening paired with, you know, solar plants. And I guess there's lots of different research going on about how you can maybe store power and tap into it when it's needed. And a lot of talk about what to do with the, you know, kind of aging fleet of coal plants or nuclear plants or gas plants as they start to age out, and how do you either replace them or make them cleaner going forward.
All right, that was our reporter, Jennifer Hiller. Thanks so much for joining us, Jennifer.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, WSJ.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for your interest in the WSJ podcasts from The Wall Street Journal. We're always looking to improve, and we're interested in hearing your opinions. Please go to WSJ.com/survey and take a survey that will help us bring you more of the content you're looking for. Thank you for your time and support.